This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
I've been filled with fear in my life, but nothing like yesterday. Maya, against my better wishes and better judgment.
Oh, here we go.
Goes down to Arkansas.
In a plane?
No.
No?
She drove.
In the car to go visit an old friend from high school. And she went alone. And I told her all last week, I'm like, Maya, please don't do this. You know, take a friend or something. Anyway, she's having a nice time down at, is it Fayetteville where the University of Arkansas is?
It is.
Yeah. She leaves yesterday to come home. And I get a, we're sitting around just watching TV. T's cooking lasagna. House smells great. Phone rings, and I look down, and it's Maya. And I'm like, this cannot be good. It's never going to be good. And I answer the phone. She is just north of Fayetteville on I-49, I think it is. On the left side of the road, the Kia has broke down.
On the left side of the road?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm. Oh, bad,
yep.
Bad.
No time to get over.
Yep. So I'm looking at her on Life 360. I'm like, oh my God, making plans to head down to Arkansas yesterday afternoon, pick her up, somehow get the car to wherever we need it to go, and then probably go back to Arkansas next weekend.
But in that moment, it is, you've got to put your seatbelt on, brace, and don't move.
Oof. What was the problem?
Well, I just heard back from the body shop. Apparently it is something, not to bore you with it, but it's a P1326 engine code relating to a national recall with Kia.
I'll tell you this, when your kid's on the side of the highway in the left lane,
care.
You do not care what is going, you just, how do you get them out of there safely?
So,
meaning the engine thinks that there is a knocking issue.
Okay.
Continue.
So, thank you.
So she's back.
Well, thank God her other grandma, not my mom, but Shauna's mom, bought both of the kids AAA insurance when they graduated from high school. AAA literally paid to drive her and tow the Kia all the way to Shawnee.
Good.
All the way. Now, at one point, Shauna and I are on the phone, and I'm like, you know, she's sitting in the cab of a tow truck with a man we don't know. He was lovely.
Now, to be fair, I have never had anything but a fantastic experience with AAA. Sometimes they take a little while to show up, but when they get they are very nice.
They were on the scene within 45 minutes.
Did she call, or was there a need to call, like, the non-emergency line or the highway patrol? Like, so somebody out some cones.
I called the sheriff's office,
and
then they sent me over to the Arkansas Highway Patrol.
Sure.
And I said, listen, you know, she's 20 years old. She's by herself. She's on the left side of the highway. Cars broke down. I said, she doesn't know what she's doing. Is there any way that you could just send a trooper over there, check on her, make sure everything's going okay, maybe stay with her for a few minutes till AAA gets there? And she goes, at what expense? So that we...
Whoa.
Oh, she was not rude, but she wasn't friendly.
What do you mean at what expense? It's a stranded motorist.
She goes, and then we need those troopers somewhere else. We just can't have a trooper go wait with some kid. I go, she's a 20-year-old girl.
Oh, I disagree.
All by herself.
That's exactly the service the Highway Patrol provides when they can.
She goes, what we can do is, she said, I'll send a trooper, and then she'll get in the trooper's car. There's a gas station across the highway. I said, but how's she going to know when AAA shows up? And the lady on the phone says, well, she won't. And I said, well, that doesn't do us any good.
But Scott, you would rather have her out of harm's way. I'll figure out the car later. The car be damned. Get her off the side of the highway.
I didn't need the Highway Patrol because as I was on with them, I get a text from Maya says AAA just showed up.
Okay.
And I said, never mind, forget it.
So yeah, if you tell AAA that you are in a unsafe situation, they prioritize your call. And the left side of the highway would qualify as an unsafe situation.
In today's day and age, the right side of the highway is an unsafe situation. You get one person with their nose in their phone driving behind you and boom.
Yep. Okay, I was so afraid.
Speaking of boom, I'm glad she's okay.
Thank you.
I know it's not funny when people get hit by flying objects, and I do not find it as funny as you do when people fall down. However, those things collided in spectacular fashion during the AT&T PGA Pro-Am over the weekend. I have never laughed so hard. And before you think I'm a horrible person, the volunteer that got struck by Shane Lowry's golf ball is fine. He is going to be fine.
Did he take it in the...
He took it sort of in the shoulder.
Okay.
And keep in mind, these guys are bombing these yards. If you're looking at the yardage, you know, he was with Rory McIlroy. It was probably a 300-yard drive. And people are saying today, well, he should have yelled four. All right. If you are a volunteer 300 yards away around the bend of a tree, you are not going to hear anyone yelling four. That's how far these guys drive the ball. Mm-hmm. But the volunteer is there on the sidelines. He's just standing, just doing volunteer things, trying to be helpful. The ball comes from this, drops out of the sky, hits him on the shoulder. And I know you're a soccer fan, Scott. It takes the guy a couple of seconds to realize, what has just happened.
Did he flop?
Then he flops to the ground and rolls. He stops, drops, and rolls. I sent that video to the boys over the weekend. Sam, I have watched it 100 times. You just hear Jim Nance go, oh.
Unfortunate.
And then you hear the other guy, and CBS could not have reacted faster to get away from that. I was like, no. Go back to the guy.
Why did they go away from it?
I don't know.
In a very calm tone, you hear, he's going to feel that one in the morning.
Oh, that's going to leave a mark. Hope that guy's okay. And then they just move on like nothing happened. So now we know, for those of you watching this live, because I'm sorry it was funny, not only is he okay, Pebble Beach has offered a free weekend stay on site at Pebble with four separate rounds of golf for him and three people of his choosing. Let me just tell you, I would get hit by a PGA golf ball all day long, twice a week, if I thought it was a free weekend at Pebble. That's like a $20,000-$30,000.
Have you ever been hit by a golf ball?
Not within inches of my life, no. My dad has. Several people close to me have.
I bet it doesn't feel good.
We'll post the video on social. It's so funny. I'm sorry. It's so funny.
Grammys last night. Album of the year goes to Beyonce with Cowboy Carter.
Good!
Song of the year is Not Like Us by Kendrick Lamar.
Because she got dissed at the CMAs, didn't she?
She did. Record of the year was Not Like Us by Kendrick Lamar. Can somebody explain to me the difference between record of the year and album of the year?
No.
One is one and the other is the other.
Thank you, Sam.
You're welcome.
Well, record is the singular record, the singular song. Album is
got
the
it.
Album.
Well, but that isn't that song of the year? Because they have song of the year as well.
I think song of the year is more of the writing.
Got it.
I think.
Best country album. Beyonce with Cowboy Carter.
Good.
That is being criticized today.
It is very country sounding to me.
No, it's not.
If you listen to modern country, it doesn't sound like, you know, Willie Nelson.
I listened to it today for the first
Loretta
time.
Loretta Lynn.
It is not country.
But if you listen to modern country with a beat, I think it is absolutely country. Some of the songs are absolutely country.
It's also wasn't that listened to.
I loved it.
Post Malone was also up for Best Country Record.
Haven't you noticed there are certain
cats and dogs living together?
Yeah, there are certain, like, during award season, they will put up an award for like best comedy, and you're like, wait, 34 people got killed in that. That was not a comedy.
You mean like The Bear being a comedy?
Yes, The Bear is not a comedy.
Well, yeah. And what was the one with Demi Moore?
Yeah.
The substance.
Oh, yeah, listed that as a comedy.
Comedy or musical.
Nothing about that was funny, and nor were there any musical notes played within the body. So it's just, it's the way you massage your entry for your best shot at winning is what it is, Scott.
It's very arbitrary. I mean, and just look, the Rolling Stones won like best hard rock album or something.
No, that was Jethro Tull. They won best metal record in 1989.
Right, but just now,
beating out Metallica.
Last night, Rolling Stones got something, and it's like, who?
No, the Rolling Stones, not the Who.
Right.
Nice.
Thank you.
Nice.
Thank you. 913-586-7798. Sam Stevie the Third, Dana Wright. My name is Scott Parks here on KMBZ. This is not country.
Well, I mean, I don't even know. Who gets to decide what country is? Because some of the awful bro country out there is not country either.
That's not
what you
country
call it.
Either.
It's not rock. It's not pop.
Like Florida Georgia Line, that is not country.
Oh, no, yeah, Cruise.
I will tell you that 49 Winchester. I listened to that on a loop, and I feel like that's probably a gun, and so they should. That's probably country, right?
That song is definitely folks country. Yes.
Thank you.
Like Chris Stapleton is country.
Well, and that's why everybody is so upset that she won Album of the Year
because she beat him.
There was a Chris Stapleton album last year.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think there are some artists that just cross all over, though? Like, what would you call Teddy Swims? There are times he sounds like country. There are times it's pop. There are times it's blues. He is so blues.
Yeah, he's hard to put into a category. And I do like Teddy Swims. He's very good. But I don't know where I would put him. Like,
put him at Starlight Theater, and I'm going. Yes, I am.
tell everybody what happened to you over the weekend.
Which part?
This part.
Okay, so I am in the market, and I want our listeners, if this is you, please text me some ideas. Because you know I've been dealing with this weird allergy plastics, maybe nickel thing forever. I pulled a muscle in my upper, what is it, oblique, Sam?
That would be your lower oblique, yes.
I did not realize I had pulled that oblique until we went out yesterday. It was so nice. Mm-hmm. We went to Lady Sykes and walked 9 holes on that little par 3.
Nice.
Had a blast because it was just gorgeous out, and a lot of the other courses were closed because of the rain. So we get out there. I go to swing a club, and when I come around that oblique, it felt like...
Like a knife.
It did. Yeah. It was a knife-searing pain, and I was like, oh my gosh, is this from those abdominal exercises a week ago? So long story short, we go home, we flip on CBS, we're watching Pebble and that dude go down to his knees, we're laughing, it hurts to laugh. I get a ice pack, and anyone who's had children, you know, I had 50 ice packs in my freezer. This was the gel, but softer, malleable, plastic exterior ice pack. Not the kind you'd put in a got cooler, but the kind that's like a little, you can kind of twist.
And it's blue.
The gooey stuff is blue inside.
Looks like it has a bunch of beads inside.
Put it on for 30 minutes, lay in there. I'm like, oh, that feels good. Later that night, I go into the bathroom. Something was like, I felt sweaty, like something was burning. It was very odd. I pull up my shirt. I can't decide whether to post this photo on social. I sent it to you.
I saw it.
I had a disgusting heat boil looking leprosic rash all over my abdomen. And I said to him, I go, oh my God, what is on my stomach? And he comes over and he goes, babe, I think that's your plastics allergy. That goo that is inside that plastic, what do you even call that? It's not cellophane, but it's a plastic casing.
It's just a thick plastic. Yeah.
Right, whatever. And so I took a picture of it. I call the allergy place this morning and I go, look, I'm falling apart here. I've got blotches all over my skin. My ears look like I've got, you know. She goes, yeah, you know, I've heard that there are people out there that have this, but we don't test for plastics. You know, you go to an allergist, they test, you know this, Sam, they test you for what? Are you allergic to eggs?
Just did it.
Pollen, dander. Yeah.
Gluten.
I said, certainly there is someone out there that can tell me specifically what I'm allergic to because I'm broken out all over my body.
Sam,
I don't think this particular one is contact dermatitis.
We talked about you off the air and behind your back earlier today.
Well, I'm glad because I'm falling apart here. Did you see the angry boils?
Oh,
it looked like a boil.
Did you put the ice pack directly on your skin?
Yes, I did. I was in a lot of pain,
Mistake
Sam.
Mistake number one.
Yes. Always grab a washcloth.
Why?
Because what you did to yourself is you gave yourself a thermal injury. People think thermal injury has to be a burn. No. When you put ice or anything that's directly out of the freezer directly onto your skin without any prepping, meaning it's cold outside, the skin is already cold, give yourself a thermal injury. I have never once in my life put an ice pack directly on my skin.
That is correct.
Are you serious?
Dead serious. You burned your skin, but not burned in the hot sense, burned in the cold sense.
Correct.
It did feel like a burn.
That's what it is.
Because it is.
Okay.
You don't have to burn yourself with heat. You can burn yourself with
cold. When you saw the photo that I sent you, did you say that was a burn?
I immediately said, that's not contact dermatitis. She freezer burned herself.
And then we spoke on the phone.
And then we talked about it on the phone.
Here comes emergency kit Dan.
EDC
Do you think that's
Dan.
You think that's a freezer burn, Dan?
Yes.
Great. Good talk.
Thanks for the input.
Good
what
talk.
What are you doing to yourself?
Well, I'm glad.
She doesn't know,
I
Dan.
Didn't go to see a dermatologist. I would have felt like an idiot. It doesn't diminish the fact that I have a plastics allergy that no one will help me with, but I digress.
That still does exist separately from the fact that you
of course it does.
Freezer burned your skin.
I said to my mom over the weekend, can we not just have one normal thing go wrong with us, like a cold? You know, something that people are like, oh, yeah. I always have to Google what's going on with me.
So do we.
Good talk.
I'm taking appointments. I'll check
Dan.
You out.
Good talk. Good talk.
You left it there for 30 minutes?
Oh, I would have gone longer.
Also, so good. 20 on, 20 off.
Yeah. Or even shorter, depending. But yes, or put something in between the ice and your skin. Yeah. 10 or 15 on,
get
10
like
or 15
a hand
off.
Towel, put a bunch of ice in it, and then put it right there on your stomach.
Even if you use a bag of frozen peas, put something in between, a light thing in between.
All right, good talk.
I'm sorry you had a painful weekend.
Thank you. Not as painful as that dude that got bean.
Well, speaking of golf, PGA veteran Jason Dye donned a full gray sweatsuit on Sunday at Pebble Beach, drawing gasps and critiques from across the fashion-conscious golf world. The 37-year-old Day shot a final round 69 at the Northern California course, coming in tied for 13th. But it wasn't his play that raised eyebrows on Sunday. It was what he was playing in. He wore a sweatsuit at Pebble. No.
Scott Parks, you were out there playing golf?
Mm-hmm.
I saw it. If they're trying to get more people into the tent, you know, I don't know that we should be using words like outrage when it comes to him wearing what he was wearing. We've seen Travis Kelce wear something similar. That was probably a $2,000 pair of pants, Scott.
But Dana, look, I mean,
I know
it's bunched at the bottom.
Yeah.
Those are sweatpants.
Very comfortable.
I'm sure.
Well, is it like a sleeve cuff at the bottom? Or is it bunched like classic sweatpants?
Bunch like classic sweatpants.
Oh, then never mind. Because I was going to say, the new jogger look, there are people that spend hundreds of dollars on joggers and are like, these are my dress pants now.
He is a bajillionaire, I guarantee you. And again, we've seen Kelce like show up in attire like this. That is couture, I don't want to call it loungewear. But it was probably even golf wear. I don't get what the big deal is. I really don't.
Speaking of outfits, did you see some of the outfits on the red carpet last night?
Oh.
No. Who?
We apparently, as a society, we are very revealing these days.
That's nothing new, though.
But there was one who took it to the extreme.
Who was it?
Well, we all know Ye and his fiance, girlfriend, wife. Nobody really knows what their relationship is. Bianca Censori.
Okay.
Under the age of 18, don't Google it. She had what they called a sheer dress on.
Oh.
And, she might as well have been wrapped in one singular layer of saran wrap.
She is nude-ish.
Ish.
There's no imagination necessary to try to figure out what.
Okay,
her
why would somebody do
like.
That? Come on.
Because they weren't hugged enough as a kid.
Come
but she showed
on.
Up with a full length all the way to the heel, black, puffy, fuzzy coat on, and then
apparently the trend this year was sheer. Wow, She wasn't the only one. That is a
bizarre
choice.
Now, there were a number of other women who had dresses on that were so low cut that you could see the top of parts that are typically covered up.
Right. Chrissy Teigen showed up sheer.
Apparently they got kicked out.
Oh, they didn't get kicked out, did they?
Escorted out of the Grammys.
I mean, she was straight up naked.
Kanye West and Bianca were escorted.
Gross. Look at that outfit. That's just gross.
Were escorted out of the 2025 Grammys after making their shocking red carpet debut. Mm-hmm. An insider explains to the New York Post that cops ushered the pair out after, quote, the crazy outfit moment they pulled on the carpet.
She is nude, except what do you call, what is that see-through gauze called? Like that you would see on something that you would stitch over a recent surgery. That she is covered in a very thin, sheer layer of that over her breasts.
Well, it was a full-length dress. It's just so thin that you can't see it.
So it's not really a dress.
Correct.
No, it is not. And we don't need to see that. Come on.
913-586-7798.
What is wrong with people?
They need attention.
What is wrong with people?
Sam's TV the Third. My name is Scott Park. She is Dana Wright here on KMBZ.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Think warm, think palm trees, think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Story here from the Associated Press. Preliminary data from the deadliest U.S. aviation accident in nearly 25 years showed conflicting readings about the altitudes of an airliner and an Army helicopter when they collided near Reagan National Airport in Washington last week, killing everyone on board both aircraft. Investigators also said that about a second before impact, the jet's flight recorder showed a change in its pitch, but they did not say whether that change in angle meant that pilots were trying to perform an evasive maneuver to avoid the crash. So here's what we've got. The initial data has the jet, according to its flight recorder, at roughly 325 feet, give or take 25 feet. So it's either 300 to 350 feet.
And it's never perfectly accurate.
Correct. When the crash occurred on Wednesday night of last week. Data in the control tower, though, has the Black Hawk helicopter at 200 feet. At the time of the collision. They cannot explain the roughly 30-meter discrepancy as of yet.
Have you seen...
130.
Give or take.
Have you seen the video from the vantage point of the end of the runway? So wherever this video was taken, it is from the vantage point of the end of the runway facing...
The front of the plane.
The commercial plane coming right toward the camera to land.
Right.
They released this new video over the weekend. As the plane is coming in and you see the helicopter coming from the left, which would be the vantage point as the plane is coming in, it appears to just fly
straight into it.
Directly into it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened.
And it's very hard when you see that video, even with the very limited information that we have right now, to understand how in the hell that happens. Because think about your own car, Scott. Most of the cars today are equipped with, you know, you're veering out of your lane.
Right.
How did this helicopter not see the plane that it drove directly into?
And by the way, that specific military helicopter is known for its agility, meaning had they seen it last second, they would have been able to maneuver out of the way.
Right into the side of it. Correct me if I'm wrong, that the chopper at the very last second, there is a peek up. They don't know what for. They know that on the plane end, there was a very last second difference in altitude. They don't know why, but there was audio that would suggest the pilots knew something was
the pilots
wrong.
Of the jet knew something was wrong. Yeah. 913-586-7798, 586-7798. I've been in a helicopter. I've never flown one, but there would have been, I believe the chief warrant officer too was the instructor. There was a captain also on board, and the crew chief was in the back. Both of those guys, the chief warrant officer and the captain, had to have been facing forward as they're flying this helicopter, the Black Hawk. How did they not see that there was a plane in their path?
It's going to be very hard for them to explain this. Look at the slower version of what is happening. And it's multiple seconds before the collision. It just doesn't make sense.
That is hard to watch.
And they should have had a lookout. This is a situation where you have to be on high alert 24/7. Their job is to make sure that they don't fly into anything.
But, you know, I got some criticism for saying this last week, and I think it was on Friday. Give me one reason why an Army helicopter, or for that matter, any helicopter, is allowed to fly in the path of a runway approach.
As long as they do not exceed 200 feet.
Regardless.
Well, I agree with you, but their specific protocol for flying down the Potomac was you can fly down this airspace, but this is the final approach for our busiest runway. You shall not exceed an altitude of 200 feet. They clearly broke that by 130.
Either that or the plane was ridiculously below its expected altitude. But I've got to think that the helicopter was way too high.
Based on all of the preliminary reports, the plane was right where it was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. And again, I go back, and maybe there are some of you in the audience who flew in the Army, or maybe you flew commercially. Why is anything allowed in the path?
Well, it isn't now. It isn't now.
Well, yeah.
You know,
nor should it be.
We are going to see that change. Already have, but I don't think it's going to go back. I can't imagine we go back to allowing those routes being flown. There are too many pilots who said on Friday, we have had near misses at that airport with helicopters.
Right. And here's the other thing. And I know what some people were saying last week and over the weekend, that these helicopters are necessary because, you know, generals who are flying into town, they need to be taken over to the Pentagon or something. Why can't they go in traffic? Why do they need to be flown through some of the busiest airspace in America? I mean, you have two airports. You have Dulles, of course, but you have Reagan National, which is just outside of D.C. There is a joint base just to the east of Reagan National. I go back to something I said either Thursday or Friday. Why don't they just use Reagan National only for dignitaries, generals, whomever,
and
build another airport way out in the country?
Because I think it would be just as safe, and certainly it would be cheaper, just to halt all of the chopper traffic.
Well, and the dignitaries is why they have the chopper traffic. Because the dignitaries land at the airport, they hop directly into a helicopter, and they take a helicopter wherever they're going. Yeah. And
well, but maybe we need to rethink that.
Well, they need to fly the helicopters outside of the approach lane.
I don't know.
I mean, that would be like, I'm going to go ahead and take my tricycle across this highway exit.
Mm-hmm. 913-586-7798. Jim in Topeka. Jim, hello. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hello there.
Hello.
Going through pilot training, on landing approach, daylight and dark, you see the lineup lights for the runway. There's also a set of lights that are red, which means you're high enough, but if you go double red, you're dead because you're too low. So with that, they know that the plane was high enough in their approach to the runway. With that, they could tell the helicopter to stay so many feet below that and be safe. So there is some other guidance things there that we aren't aware of unless that you have taken some training to see. And I don't remember whether it's all white or whether it's red, but I know double red and you're dead, so that airplane was high enough if the helicopter was low enough and there was clearance for them to miss.
Jim, do appreciate the call. Thank you, buddy. 913-586-7798. 913-586-7798. Here on Dana and Parks on KMVZ. The great Billy Squire. Dale in Olathe, line two. Dale, hello.
Hi, I'm a fairly low error pilot, so I will certainly defer to pilots of a lot greater experience. But one of the first things you learn as a pilot, your instructor tells you, is never totally rely on air traffic control. If you disobey them, you better have a good reason. They're there for guidance, and you're to tell them where you are, but you can never 100% rely on them. My instructor told me wisely, he said, listen, you're the one in the plane. It's your hind end on the line. He's up there in a tower smoking a cigarette, and he's got his foot up. So I twice, as a fairly low-hour pilot, had two near air collisions, and the answer from the tower was, well, what's that other plane doing there? They don't always notice incursions into the area. So that's one thing. The second thing, and the more important thing, is this CRJ was not only on final approach. He was on what we call short final, and I would say very short final. He was darn near over the threshold. He's coming over the river there. There should be an automatic, I don't care when or where, for any aircraft to transfer across that area, an automatic pause, especially helicopters. They can stop midair. They can ask for permission to cross that area. Now, 4 or 5 miles out, maybe 200 feet separation is fine. But when you're that close to the threshold, nobody should be coming across there unless they've been given active permission to cross that level. 200 feet is nothing at that point in time.
Dale, can you help us understand? I'm going to read this sentence again because there's conflicting information about what the altitude of those two aircraft. Clearly, they were at the same altitude at the same time toward the end. The plane's altitude suggests the Army helicopter was flying above 200 feet, the maximum altitude we know for the route it was using. Yet the control tower's radar apparently showed the helicopter at 200 feet at the time of the accident. They're saying today there's conflicting information about what the radar is showing versus what we know had to have been fact for that collision to occur.
Well, my answer to that is both of these systems can be wrong, okay? We're dealing with technology which is older. When you're down low, there's a lot of ground clutter, so radar from the tower can often be inaccurate. The plane's altimeter can clearly be inaccurate if it isn't properly set. So they're going to have to really determine what the altitudes were. But both systems can be wrong. Wow.
Dale, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it.
And does that not say to you, Scott, if both systems can be wrong, that it's even more urgent that we don't have the congestion we have
that
close to the runway?
And I am not, I don't think I understand why a helicopter is even in the path of that runway.
No one has been able to answer that.
Why not, you know, move that helicopter, go farther east and then go south and then come back west and get over the Potomac River if you have to. But I just don't understand why anything is going in front of that runway.
And to Dale's initial point, because there is a chance that those altitude altimeters could be off, you have to rely on your vision. You are the one flying the plane. You have to look around. You have to be able to see what's going on rather than just listening to ATC. And it sounds like there was a miscommunication somewhere.
We know the Black Hawk crew had night vision goggles on board. We do not know if they were wearing them. We know that they were on board. But when you see the path of this surveillance camera that we're talking about, You will be dumbfounded that this helicopter crashed into that plane.
Speaking of night vision, let's go to Bob in Kansas City. Bob, hello.
Yeah, I was going to say that they may very well head on their night vision, and they wouldn't see that airplane until it was right in front of them. And the reason why there's so much traffic right there, those helicopters are there to evacuate the city if there was like a major emergency, like attack or something.
For continuity of government, yes. What they were doing, Bob, was the training that they would have to enact to get high-level dignitaries out quickly, God forbid, like a 9/11 would happen. But, Bob, help explain that the night vision goggles would make it worse.
Mm-hmm. In a city.
Yeah, it's going to... what I've seen, they you're going to be focused. It's kind of tunnel vision, and you're not going to see off. You're not going to have side vision from it. And so you're not going to see it until something flies right in front of you. And at 150 miles an hour, it's too late.
Well, and it was my understanding, having watched way too much news over the weekend and late last week, they had on, a couple of military experts, which is to say retired 1-2-star generals, who were making the argument, yes, they might have had night vision goggles on board, but they would have been fools to put them on. And I'll try to explain this as best I can. In a city where there is so much
light noise,
thank
light
you.
Light pollution, yeah.
Yeah. Basically, you're putting on these goggles, and all you're going to see are every light down below magnified inside your goggles. That you use the goggles when you're out in the field.
Right.
Because it illuminates areas that are not already lit up.
And it just looks like a dense fog when there is that light pollution. And to the point that he was making, it's like a horse with blinders. Like, imagine putting two, toilet paper tubes up to your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
That's your view. No peripherals whatsoever.
And so, I mean, there wouldn't be a reason to put them on, right? It's not going to help you see any better.
Other than specific training purposes, because that's what you would have to do in that scenario. Say there were an attack and the power was out in the city.
Mm-hmm.
There would be no reason to have them on.
All right. News coming up at the top of the hour with Dan Weinbaum. Telephone number here is 913-586-7798. He is Sam Stevie III. She is Dana Wright. My name is Scott Parks. Don't forget to check out our podcast, the Dana and Parks Podcast, available anytime you want. Just go to kmbz.com.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks Podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at kmbz.com.